Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dan Bernstein.
Who the hell is that?
Middays on 670 The Score.
2-2. Hey! Swing and a miss, and how about the reaction from McGuire? He pumps his fist. Kopech picks up his sixth strikeout.
Special. He's one of my favorite. I knew him as a young guy when I was in Boston, but now he's just taken another step, and he's talked to the right people, and he's let things go, you know, not worrying about too many things. That's cleared him up and took him to the next level of elite.
Joe Kelly talking about Michael Kopech, and the Chicago White Sox, the Boston Red Sox are facing off. Red Sox are starting to heat up a little bit here. I want to say that was Harry Doyle, the character played by Bob Uecker, who says they were threatening to climb out of last place, and indeed they did. Here to talk about the White Sox upcoming opponent is Rob Bradford. He is on Twitter at Bradfo. Red Sox writer for WEEI and host of the Bradfo Show podcast. It was just here with Joe Kelly down at Cork. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. How are you, Rob?
Watch out. The best 19-22 team in the history of baseball coming your way, the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I know. I hear this. I hear the sarcasm. So, in all honesty, are they regressing to form after a slow start? Because we're waiting for the White Sox to do the same.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's funny, you know, paying attention to the White Sox and obviously covering the Red Sox, I see two teams that underperformed out of the gate, but at the end of the day, I do think both probably will be in the postseason. And I know I kid about the Red Sox, but with the wild card situation and the talent they have and the way that they're playing, they had a lot of stuff that they had the blueprint for coming out of spring training, and the blueprint didn't work. So they had to adjust, and they have adjusted. Their starting pitching has been really good. The biggest thing is their offense, and particularly Trevor Story, who was just a disaster the first month, has been unbelievable in the last week and a half. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I think they're coming back to the point where, okay, this is a pretty good team. They're not going to win the division. They're too far out for that, but still they can make some waves. And I think the same thing with the White Sox.
What of the blueprint didn't work?
Well, it's a good question. Start with Trevor Story. I mean, Trevor Story, with him producing, was non-negotiable. This was the biggest investment that Heim Bloom made since he was with the Red Sox. A lot was going into it, a lot of conversations, you know, whether he's going to replace Xander Bogaerts, was he leveraged for Xander Bogaerts, you know, how is he going to fit? Is he going to be able to replace guys like Hunter Renfro's 30 home runs? All of that. So, and out of the gate, he was terrible. He was awful. And I think the Boston thing was getting to him a little bit. He was booed for the first time. It wasn't just one time either. It was multiple times. And then, boom, it clicked. Last week, starting with that homestand, he hits a home run. Next thing you know, he has five home runs in 4 days. And the whole lineup was completely different. You're still figuring things out with this lineup. But to have that guy, to have that bat there is a big deal. And then you're sorting through the bullpen. Because it's not like the White Sox. This is where the Red Sox and White Sox are different. The Red Sox didn't invest a lot of money in their bullpen. They just said, hey, you know what? We think you can get by with Matt Strom and Jake Diekman and Hansel Robles and these guys, and we're going to bob and weave our way through the order. And it wasn't really working, particularly at the end, And now they sort of come to, okay, this guy can do this and this guy can do that, and it's okay. We can get by with this bullpen.
Why is Alex Verdugo bad?
Put that on the bumper stickers.
But, I mean. But you're laughing. That is as straightforward a question as I can ask.
No, I like the directness. Well, I will say this: he wasn't bad last year. He obviously in the first couple of years of the Red Sox, he showed a lot of promise. This year, he has not been good, and it seems like he's always sort of banged up here and there. There was a lot of questions if he could actually be an everyday player hitting left-handed. That's really, he's having a hard time hitting everybody right now. He's had some signs, but the thing with Verdugo in Boston is that it's always going to be the shadow of Mookie Betts. I mean, it's always going to be that. And nobody's going to say that he has to be Mookie Betts. But considering that, you know, the trade that you made for what is probably going to be a Hall of Fame player in Mookie Betts, right now you go back two guys, Connor Wong and Jeter Downs, both are in the minor leagues, both aren't really impressing that much, and Alex Verdugo. So Verdugo has to be the guy, and he just simply hasn't been. All they want him to be is they want him to ultimately be maybe an all-star. And that seems like a lot. It's not a lot. We all know people who made the All-Star team. You're a good player if you make the All-Star team. But right now, as we sit here, you're asking me that question for a very good reason, because he hasn't been close to being an All-Star.
Now, meanwhile, Chris Sale is alive, because you never know with him. And he's through a bullpen. It looks like he's coming back from what was a stress fracture in his rib cage. I know he's had, we always talk about these unique Chris Sale ailments, because he's just got such a unique physiology. If he comes back, would they be willing to have him with fewer pitches and use him like he started his career as a high leverage reliever?
Yeah, see, I don't think they would do that, but I don't think you would get the sort of the long leash Chris Sale outings. Like last year in the playoffs, why Cora was pulling the trigger in terms of, hey, you know what, we're not letting you go three times for the order. The one time that he did it was with Sale, and it backfired. You know why? Because it was Chris Sale. And you know, but I think that when you see this guy come back, he's going to fall in with a lot of these other guys in the rotation, or really in baseball, where you say, you know, hey, two times through the order, I don't care if you're at 60 pitches, I don't care if you're at 80 pitches, we see the pockets coming up in the lineup, and we think the relievers can do a better job of getting the guy out. Before that was unthinkable with Chris Sale. So I just think that's what you're going to see coming out of the gate. And believe, you know, Chris Sale, as you know, like, he's really good with the media in terms of articulating himself in Boston. He's really handled that whole thing well about being accountable. But at the same time, it's come to the point now where he is catching heat, because it was one thing to make that trade to win the World Series and say, hey, you gave up two good players, but that's okay, you won the World Series. But now you're sitting there with this contract extension, making $30 million a year and not pitching. It's starting to catch up in terms of public perception. So, but, you know, listen, in August, we could be having a completely different conversation.
You mentioned a couple trades here, the one of Mookie Betts, the one of Chris Sale, and connected to all this via trade, Michael Kopech of the White Sox looks like he's starting to be what was envisioned, maybe not in quite exactly the same way. You know, we heard these tales of him throwing 108 miles an hour in his warm-ups or whatever it is, and the stuff's still really good, but he's more than that. And it does seem like he's pitching. Hell, it's his ninth professional year already. Mm. You know him. What do you see in him and of him right now?
Well, I think, you know, the soundbite you played of Joe talking about him, I mean, I think that said a lot. And, you know, talking to Michael when he was at Fenway a couple of weeks ago, he admitted, he's like, listen, you know, I had to stop being the guy, as you said, who was going to throw 108, who was going to set records for the hardest thrown pitch of all time. I can't be that guy, and I can't be the guy off the field that I was either. Because we can go down the long list of things when he was with the Red Sox organization that went awry. I remember walking out of the clubhouse one just random day in the middle of spring training, and there's Michael Kopech walking by with a cast on his hand. It turns out he got in a fight with his roommate. You know, so And that was just one thing. A lot of stops and starts. You always knew it was in there. You always knew he had talent. But talking to him the other day, it was so refreshing because, you know, first sign of addiction is denial, right? I mean, you have to figure, you have to look in the mirror and say, I can't be that guy. I have to be this guy. And he absolutely has embraced it. It's great to see what he's doing on the field. It's great to see the way that he's doing it on the field. And by all accounts, it's great to see this story, how he's matured.
Is that because he's become a husband and father? Is this because he's been open and honest about seeking help with his mental health? What do you think the process has been?
Yeah, I can't say for sure. I don't want to say, I can take an educated guess about it, and I think it's something you said. I think it's being open and honest in terms of where he's at in his life, what he's done in his life, you know, where he's going in his life. And I think that's a big part of for all these guys. And this is really not to get too deep into it, but I think that the great thing that we're going through in baseball, in the world of Major League Baseball right now, is that I think more guys are accepting of that. Think about that. You know, 10 years ago, like this was, people were, I can't be honest. I can't be open. I can't get therapy. I can't do any of this. No, I can't do that. I can't change. I'm supposed to be that guy. I think a lot of that has changed. And I think that obviously for the better, and this is, I my educated guess when it comes to Michael, is this is another case of that.
Joe Kelly said something yesterday. He was terrific on these airwaves yesterday. I mean, just really a fascinating guy. And he admitted being envious of Liam Hendricks' arm. And just say that a guy who's just able to, you know, warm up that fast and throw the pitches that he throws. What do you think the Sox have in Joe Kelly as he's coming back from injury here?
Well, I mean, I think that we saw a little bit in glimpses, obviously, the last his first few outings. Now, he had a little bit of rust patch, but you look at what he did at Yankee Stadium, and you look at what he can do. His even though he had the health thing last year, he's bounced back, and he's throwing as good as ever. And the biggest thing here is not only that you have an arm that you can pitch at the end of games and big time and big moments. And this is another thing about Kelly, like you're going to have your bumps in the road, but at the same time at the big moments, for whatever reason, like go look at his postseason stats. Mm-hmm. They're insanely good. And like, he's the guy who you want out there. He just doesn't care, as you found out yesterday, about, you know, the big moment or what people think or whatever it is. And I think that's another big part of this clubhouse. Like, I'm not around the White Sox clubhouse, but I do talk to Joe. And I can tell you from what he says is that this White Sox clubhouse is a really good clubhouse with the right intentions. And I think that a guy like him is a really, and Liam are great fits in terms of what a winning clubhouse looks like. And I think that that's what the White Sox have.
That's a high praise then, I think. I hope it matters. I hope that's an important thing because with baseball, I never know. I never know if we just talk about it after a team wins and they say, well, it was a great clubhouse, or if you can know ahead of time and whether or not that even correlates to winning games or not. I guess you'd rather have a good one than a bad one, right?
No, well, I mean, you talked to Joe. I mean, that we talked about it yesterday in the podcast where we, you know, he thinks he was traded from St. Louis, or you know, educated guess, because of his personality, because of the way he was perceived. And he said, you know, that clubhouse was completely different. The 2018 Red Sox clubhouse, the Dodgers clubhouse he was in, the White Sox clubhouse that he's talking about right now, he said they're all the common denominators, where you have guys not worrying about, you know, playing time, not worrying about brands, not worrying about, you know, all the other stuff of stats. We're just worrying about winning. And it's not always going to be 100%, but as he points out, he's been on some winning teams, and he said, listen, I see that here. And you can get a little sense of that in all the kerfuffle that's been going on over the last few days with the Yankees. Like, you get a sense of that. I mean, again, I'm not around the White Sox. I just talked to Joe, but that's what he tells me.
Lastly, I want to get back to something you mentioned before when you were talking about Chris Sale. And you implied there's something about the relationship with the Boston media and or fans that required a certain diplomacy or deft touch or an ability to articulate oneself. Does that still exist? I know that every heritage sports city, whether it's New York, Philly, Chicago, they like to think, well, you know, it's tough to play here because we're so demanding or we have such high standards. Is Boston still, is it different, and is it different in a good way?
It's here's the answer to that. There's one word that every player who comes through Boston to this day should understand. It's accountability. It's accountability. That's all people want. And you can buy yourself so much time if you have accountability. And that's, you know, honestly, Chris Sale's bought himself a lot of time because there's nobody been more accountable. You know, when he gets out in front of a mic after a bad outing or if he gets hurt or whatever it is. And every player that's come through, like, that's the thing that they should be told. And I'll give you an example. It's a recent example. Trevor Story, who is a great guy in the clubhouse, everything you want in a baseball player. Okay, so he has a 4-strikeout game, and then the media's waiting, waiting, waiting. He doesn't come out. Well, you know, he got ripped in the media because, like, you just struck out 4 times. Well, he didn't know. Like, he didn't know because he had never gone through that. It wasn't, like, malicious, or it wasn't like he wasn't being accountable. He just didn't know. But I guarantee you that's the type of guy that going forward, he'll be out there every single time. You know, if he has a terrible game, he'll be out there answering the questions because, like, first of all, that's who he is. And also, he knows how important it is. Alex Cora grabbed Eric Gagne when he came to Boston and said, listen, you cannot leave after you blow a save. And you know what? Eric Gagne never left after that. So to go back to it, that's the biggest thing in Boston.
Did Cora talk to Story?
I don't think he needed to. Like, I honestly, like, I don't think that this was, well, listen, I mean, there were stories written, there were columns written in the Boston media about how dare Trevor Story bail out after striking out 4 times. So I don't think anybody needed to do this to Trevor Story, because I bring up the Gagne example. The Gagne example was, well, he wanted to leave because he didn't want to answer the questions. Good guy, but didn't want to answer the questions. And so Cora said, listen, you've got to do it. I think Trevor Story kind of understands that you have to answer the questions. It just, like, in his mind, he's like, I just got to go work in the cage for 2 hours after the game, which is what he did. So in that case, I don't think Cora had to talk to him.
That's interesting, because I think there are guys, when you sign a big contract, when those high expectations, when you come in, I always am curious about who actually says those things to someone about this is what you can expect here. And if you come here, this is how your life might be different, because every team, every history, every market has its own rules in that regard.
Yeah, and I can tell you with the Trevor Story situation, I talked to him about it. It was about a week ago. He hits a big home run, first game of a homestand. This is sort of his moment. I said, you know, listen, I remember when Torrey Hunter said this, and this is going back a little bit, but in 2008, when Torrey Hunter went from the Twins, where he had been his entire life, to the Angels, he said, it wasn't until I hit a grand slam, a game-winning grand slam, that I actually felt welcome, at home, comfortable, everything. And sometimes these guys need those moments. And you know, that's what Story had, and I think that it's not seamless. I mean, these guys are human beings. They have to know where the new grocery store is and around the corner from where they're living, like all of this stuff. So, you know, but in Boston, the biggest thing is that while you're figuring all that out, you got to make sure you're accountable.
Let me ask you this while I got you here, because I've just finished watching the HBO series Winning Time about the Showtime Lakers. I don't know if you're watching it. But
yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy, by the way, the back and forth of people either saying it's great or people ripping it. So that's good.
I absolutely can't get enough of it. And I know that it's fiction, and I understand why people are mad, but I'm entertained by the fact that people are mad. But how did Boston react to how it was cartoonishly portrayed before they went into Boston? And there's that whole montage that is not exactly subtle in painting Boston with a very broad and openly racist brush.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's low-hanging fruit, right?
Yeah.
It's low-hanging fruit. I mean, this is what this is the thing that stinks about, you know, if you want to get into that conversation with Boston, it's we have to fend off all this. And listen, a lot of, in Boston, there's a history of it. I get that. So there's a reason why you have to fend it off. But I get when Kyrie Irving walks off the court and gets the water bottle thrown at him by one idiot, one moron, mm-hmm. one, you know, just like a guy just is one guy.
But you knew,
you knew it was coming, right? Here come the talking heads and national everything, and you knew it, Boston. And this is the bed that the Boston sort of lies in. We understand that. And it leads you to images like you're talking about, portrayals like you're talking about. And unfortunately, it's sort of a circle the wagons mentality. It's not, I mean, this is a terrible analogy, but it's like with the Patriots hatred, you know, the rest of the country used to hate or hates the Patriots. Like, well, how dare you hate the Patriots? You know, circle the wagons. Mm-hmm. With the race talk in Boston, it's a circle of wagons mentality in Boston. And but we know, you know, that when something like this is going to, or that conversation, the old Celtics and the Lakers and all of that comes up, you know, we know it's coming. And again, a lot of it is earned. And that's the unfortunate part of it.
Well, good stuff. I'm glad I remembered to ask about that. Rob, terrific. Really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you later.
That's Rob Bradford.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.